Welcome to Tech Talk, y'all.
Hi, and welcome to Tech Talk, y'all, season 11, episode 285. I'm Adam Walker.
And I'm Sanjay Park.
And we got a great episode for you today, as we do every week. We are going to start out with a few He Who Shall Not Be Named articles. I apologize in advance, but it must be done because it's in the news and it is probably important to be aware of. So listen, let's just dive in. I'm ready to go.
Yep, let's do it.
You feeling good?
Yeah, okay. So, I'm good.
Article number one, He Who Shall Not Be Named, also known as Elon Musk, names NBCU ad chief Linda, last name I can't pronounce, as Twitter CEO.
Yaccarino.
We're going to go with Yaccarino, according to
apologies.
Sanjay.
Yeah. Apologies to Linda.
Apologies, Linda. Yeah, sorry, Linda. Her name. Sorry about that.
By the way, every time you say his name and then he who shall not be, I like had this like foreboding feeling like a new window is going to pop up in our recording studio here. And he's going to be there and be like, hey guys, I'm here.
It's like in Harry Potter, they're afraid Voldemort will show up so they don't say his name.
Exactly.
Like, you're afraid he's just going to like pop up in Riverside like, hey guys. Let's talk about Twitter
and Tesla and all the things that I'm doing.
I can see that. Yeah. So I will say about the new CEO for Twitter. I think this is a good move considering her vast experience in advertising and all of the advertising dollars that they have profoundly lost. So I think that that's really smart. I'll also say that I don't think she's going to have very much control over the company at all.
No.
But then also it was interesting in the article. It talked about how her team at NBCU is about 2,000 people that she runs a team of 2,000 people, and now she's running a company of 1,500 people.
Yeah.
So it almost in some ways to me feels very much like a demotion. Like she has less people working
less
for
people,
her.
Yeah.
She has a better title, but obviously it's going to be highly controlled by the chairman of the board and CTO Elon Musk. So it seems like a demotion in so many ways to me.
I really struggle as to why anybody would do this, like take this job.
Unless she's getting a lot of equity. Like that's my only guess. Is like she's getting a lot of equity in the deal, and she's convinced that Elon Musk can turn it around, which I don't think he can.
I hope she's getting a lot of cash money.
Yeah,
because I don't think that equity
is going to be worthless.
I mean, if you look at anything that's happened, I mean, we talked about this before, right?
It's already gone down.
He's
devalued his own company.
Right.
Yeah,
he bought it at what was it, $40 billion?
Something like that.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And then the stock grants just recently were at like $12 billion or something. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, it's gone down.
It's gone way down.
And all the great talent, the thing that actually makes the company worth something,
right.
The great talent is gone.
It's all gone.
So
they've all left.
I hope Linda asked for, cash on the barrelhead rather than equity, because equity ain't worth
it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it.
What's also not worth something, Tesla's in China, apparently. They recall virtually every car they have ever sold in China.
Yeah. So this was weird to me. Yeah. Did you read the article? So it's a software recall.
Yeah.
And it talked about how there was an issue with the energy recapture and using the brakes. But specifically, it talked about how it did not give the user an alert if they had their foot on the gas for too long. And I'm like, isn't that just like normal driving? Like having your foot on the gas? Like, isn't that just a normal driving thing? It was a really strange, I do not understand the way it was written. It doesn't make any sense to me how it works.
Yeah, so, that is kind of weird. And this is one of the things that Elon Musk has railed against, because he's like, well, why do we have to call it a recall? We're just going to do software. And like no cars are actually having to come back into the repair shop.
He's not wrong about that.
He's not, but it's also, I think automobiles are different, right, than other
things. That's true.
And the thing that they're fixing is a problem with the car, and it's always been called a recall because how it is. Like, maybe in the future, they won't be called recalls. It'll be like, oh, there's a mandatory software update.
I will say, speaking of recalls, and we don't have this tagged in the articles, but there was a Peloton recall for all of their original bikes, and it was related to the seat post having some problems. Only 35 people have been injured, so out of the many thousands of bikes, it seems like a pretty small percentage. But I will say, it was maybe the easiest recall I've ever been a part of, because like I saw the article, I went to the link on the Peloton site about the recall. It took me to a checkout page with the thing already in my cart. It was free. It already had my information because I'm a user. I hit done. I hit, purchase or whatever, and it was done. Like it's on the way. Like it's super, super simple. So I will say props to Peloton for at least getting that right.
And I think I read one of the articles. It said, I think you get it in like 5 days or 7 days or something like that.
Yeah, so it hasn't been that many days yet for me. So, it should be on the way. So I'm, you know,
but that's pretty easy. Fun. So you're riding gently on the Peloton right now. I take
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I'm not doing any handstands on it or anything, any like Cirque du Soleil movements. Oh, okay. I'm basically all the Cirque du Soleil training that I've been doing on the Peloton is, it's gotta be on hold. I'm a little upset about it. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, I'm looking forward to you getting the new seat and then me getting video of you doing those handstands and Cirque du Soleil training.
Listen, man, I've got a Cirque du Soleil story for you. And I don't know if I've ever told you this, and this is a little bit off topic, but I'm gonna tell you anyway. So I have a buddy that went and auditioned for Cirque du Soleil. He was an amazing trampolinist. And he auditioned. And so he's around all these just amazing acrobats.
Okay.
And he said he went out to a pub afterwards drinking with the acrobats. And this one guy that's already in the show was like, just, he was so hammered, he could barely walk. Okay.
Okay.
So dude could barely walk, but his muscle memory was so good that he was sitting on a bar stool, and he would put one hand down in between his legs onto the bar stool and press himself one-handed up into a handstand. And he was like upside down, just moving the bar stool around, spinning himself in circles. His balance was, and his muscle memory was so good, he could do that. But then when he came down, he like staggered off to the bathroom, like could barely walk. Like, that's how good the acrobats in Cirque du Soleil are. I'm just telling you right now. So,
wow,
that was a big, big divergence in what we're supposed to be talking about. But, so let's move on.
But by the way, I just realized too that if we can get video of you doing Cirque du Soleil moves on your Peloton bike, that would be a great video to have for our subscriber only version of Tech Talk Y'all. By the way, if you don't realize it, you can become a subscriber of Tech Talk Y'all, and we are publishing or trying to publish episodes for subscribers only.
We're starting.
$2.99 a month. You can go to Spotify and check it out there, or go to our website, techtalkyall.com.
Absolutely. All right, moving on. I think it's your turn.
A former pilot on why autonomous vehicles are so risky. This was an interesting read, right? This was good. So basically her point is, and she's a safety expert. She's a former pilot. She was working for the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, NHTSA, Missy Cummings. And she basically said that, look, you need to either have the driver completely responsible for everything or not responsible for anything. This whole middle ground business is where dangerous. People do bad things, right? Because they feel like it'll do everything and it doesn't, and they don't realize when they need to get involved and bad things happen.
And she did mention that like cruise control is okay. Like humans are good with cruise control, but they still need to be controlling the car in the lane. And her point, I mean, and to her point, like if because Tesla would say like, oh, autopilot works, and you need to be ready to take over. The problem with the human brain doesn't work like that. Like we're either fully engaged and it has our full attention, or it doesn't have enough of our attention. And there's really no middle ground.
Yeah.
And so like, you're not going to be ready to quote take over. Like that really is kind of a ridiculous proposition.
Yeah.
So I really like this approach, honestly. And it makes perfect sense to me.
The other interesting thing that she talks about here is something that they call risk homeostasis. And I thought this was actually an interesting thing, and I think it has applications across other areas as well. But basically saying like, look, people will then take advantage of these things and do more risky things. And what they were actually showing is that the accidents caused by people in these vehicles are actually worse than when you don't have these technology. Because the whole theory here is that by having these, self-driving and like taking over some of the features will help reduce accidents. And they're like, she's like, no, it's actually making it worse because now people are taking more risks because now they feel like this part is safer.
And in particular, when she says like more risk, she says like they're actually driving faster than they otherwise would because they feel safer.
Right.
And I think earlier in the article, she said there's really no proven statistics that say that these systems actually make you a safer driver, which I think we've read other articles that claim otherwise on that. So I'm not entirely sure how accurate that statement is. But I think to her point, like the risk homeostasis, I think, is a real threat.
Yeah.
And as we get these technologies around us, we're going to need to be more aware of
that. I mean, that said, I lend a little bit more weight to her opinion being a
fighter pilot
that has dealt with autopilot systems.
That's true.
And then working at the NHTSA, Like, yeah. They don't let just, you know, idiots work on national
that's
highway
true.
Transportation safety mm. stuff. So, yeah.
All right. Well, more on car stuff. Toyota car location data for 2 million customers exposed for 10 years. So if you are a Toyota user and you use their like little like auto GPS, whatever inbuilt system, I don't even know. Is over the last 10 years. I don't know what it's called. Then your data has been exposed. And not only that, it was a misconfiguration of the database that did not require a password, like no password at all. Like that's a pretty big misconfiguration.
Nah, it's fine.
I'm just saying, like, it feels like that's a big miss. Swing and a miss.
It's just free data. Like, hey, everybody's stuff. Well, and the point they do make is like, look, this is not personally identifiable because everything was based on VIN number, and VIN numbers are not actually tied to your person.
Right.
But also
You can just walk up and snap a picture of anybody's car anywhere and get the VIN number instantly.
Yeah, so if you don't realize this, but if you walk up to, and it's required to be able to be visible, but you walk up to the dashboard from the outside of the vehicle, you look down, the VIN number is right there.
It's right there,
And you could take a picture. So
bottom right of the windshield. I mean, it's
on the driver's side, yeah.
Yeah, you can get anybody's VIN number anytime. Yeah. If you see them get out of the car, it's their car. Oh, boop. There's the VIN number. Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's also etched on like a lot of parts, and it's on your door frame and things like that. It's a pretty public info, but it's not easy to guess either. And so in this case, it's like,
it does feel like this is like a treasure trove of data. And like, if there's some stalker out there, they're like, ooh, now I can find everything. So I don't know.
It's
a little scary.
I wonder if this is available somewhere, if somebody has access to it, because there's probably a lot of interesting driving data because of this. Because the exposure was from recordings from November 2016 to April 2023. So literally just like a month ago. And that's like 7 years worth of driving data. And I wonder, like, if you could analyze all that, how it changed, like probably like the beginning of the pandemic, you could probably see this big nosedive in miles driven and all that kind of stuff. Just interesting, but
interesting.
There you go.
Interesting.
And last up before the break, IRS test free e-filing system that could compete with tax prep giants. Yay.
I don't know, man. Like okay. So on the surface, this feels great. Like this, like people need free tax prep. It'll save them money like that. Cause honestly, most people's taxes are so simple that it's absurd that they have to have an accountant or whatever else. Right. So yes, on the surface is great, but I'm very concerned about the government managing this technology. Well, like it just feels like it's going to be a nightmare.
So here's the thing. This was built in conjunction with the US Digital Service, which I hold very in high regard. Because they were the ones that went in and rebuilt the stuff for the ACA. They've rebuilt so many. They've gone into the VA.
So they know what they're doing. Okay.
One of the former heads is a friend of mine, this guy named Matt Cutts, who spent...
Built by Matt Cutts' team?
Well, so he's not there anymore.
He got it set up. Okay.
This group of people that have been in industry... And have moved back into government service or moved into government service for the first time. So it's not just people that have been in government their entire careers. It's people that are actually in industry. So I feel like I hope that they are doing the right things. I know there's a lot of chaos in terms of how the tax rules are applied and all this kind of stuff. But I'm hoping, you know, some of these folks like Intuit and folks like that have been lobbying for years and lots of money to prevent this kind of stuff from happening. H&R Block is another one. And it just keeps taxes complicated because the IRS has a lot of our data already. A lot of this could just be like, hey, I logged in. Here's how much you owe. Like, you don't even have to type in anything.
Yeah.
Because they already have like a lot
it
of
shouldn't
this
be
stuff
that hard. It shouldn't be this hard.
Like years ago, they changed. There was a rule that mandated previously stock purchases and sales. The brokerage that you were using only had to report how much you sold it for, not what you bought it for. But that changed years ago, probably 20 years ago, I think.
Right.
Now they track all of that stuff. And so they report to the IRS like, hey, you bought it for this on this date. You sold it for this on this date.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Like, that's just simple math. Like, you don't need me to do any of that stuff.
Right.
You don't need me to type that in anywhere. Like, you already have the data. Just fill it out and tell me how much I owe. That's all.
All right, next up, Swiss startup edges closer to first ever space debris collection. And like on the surface, that title is like, oh man, this is great. We're going to start collecting space debris. But then you dig into it, it's like, great, they're going to get one thing, like one thing. That's, I think it's like 100 kilograms out of space. So they're going to like, it's this massive effort to get one thing that's 100 kilograms out of space. And then you keep reading down the article, and it says, at present, there are over 34,000 pieces of space debris larger than 10 centimeters, as well as 6,500 operational satellites in orbit. So, okay, so we got one of the bigger pieces out from this one launch, but then we got, is it like one down and like 34,000 to go? Like this, it just is like, I read the article, I'm like, wah, wah.
And also to get that one thing, we're going to have to pollute up the earth to launch the thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There.
And then like, that doesn't seem great. Yeah. And of course it's going to get the debris and it's going to push it back into the atmosphere to have it burn up on reentry, which is like, okay, I guess that's good. I mean, I guess that's maybe better than pushing out of deep space. I don't know. It's easier for sure.
There's just so many questions. It's only getting one at a. Oh, it's deorbiting. So does it stay up there and then just keeps deorbiting
things? Well, maybe again? that would be ideal. Like that could work if you just keep deorbiting lots
really
of stuff.
Don't really explain that, right? Yeah.
No, okay. We need more details.
I think that's the new name of a company that we're starting, Deorbiting Ventures.
Yeah. And I think that's a new good term for like crashing. Like we didn't crash, we deorbited.
Did your company fail? No, it just deorbited.
And it was it. I don't know if it was this article or if it was another article, but it also talked about how the EU has more private space funding and more private space projects in the US now, which I thought was interesting too. Anyway, it's just fascinating. So I think this is a good step in the right direction. For sure, but it does feel very much like a drop in the bucket. And I do think that space debris is going to be a major, major issue and a major danger in the relatively near future if we're not careful about how we manage space.
I mean, we've talked about it a number of times, right? Like Starlink and things like that are really goofing things up. Our astronomers are not able to see because their pictures are now streaked with these satellites going across.
Yeah, it's crazy. So,
yeah, that's crazy. What you get for wanting your internet everywhere.
That's there it. That's what you get.
Mm-hmm. But at least you're going to be able to hear, maybe, with this next thing. Scientists regenerate hair cells that enable hearing. So you know this, hopefully, that the hair inside of your ears that are used for hearing, they don't regenerate on their own. They once you destroy them, that's it. You're done. And so that's part of the reason why we believe that people have tinnitus, right? So as you were younger, if you went to all your rock concerts, and I know you went to a lot of rock concerts.
I mean, a handful. Yeah.
And you didn't protect your hearing. Well, that leads to that ringing in the ears later on in life. And so they've actually figured out a gene therapy solution to potentially create and regrow those hairs back into your ears. These are not the ugly hairs on the outside of your ears, you know, the old man thing that ends up happening that you and I are going to have to deal with. But this is actually the useful ones inside of the ear that help your hearing. And so I thought this was pretty fascinating. Like what were they studying? The zebrafish, which I don't know why zebrafish have.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get that deep into it, I don't think. So, but,
Yeah. So gene therapy coming to an ear near you.
All right. Well, speaking of other new things that are coming to other things near you, WhatsApp is getting locked conversations. So if you need to have a private conversation that's hidden and locked down, that's the place to do it. I mean, it's encrypted, it's locked, it can be hidden. It's all the thing. I don't have any conversations like this. It doesn't matter to me personally.
At first, I was excited by this because I was like, oh, conversations that I'll never have to see again because they're being locked away. That would be great.
No. You want to hide conversations from other people, like super secure. If you're talking about like, I don't know, like super top secrety stuff, which I'm not. So
You're in the wrong circles. I talk about top secrety stuff all the time.
I mean, I basically just put all of my conversations out on my blog, you know, like just all of them. They're just publicly available on my all the time.
Is your blog like Creed's access to Twitter and it's just a Word doc that nobody has access to?
Yeah, that's it.
Ryan is trying to protect the world. from
it's a singular file on my computer that I think other people read.
www.creedthoughts.com.
Creedthoughts.com/whatever/
In case you don't know that reference, listeners, that's a reference
from the Office. We'll find the clip and drop a link in the show notes for you. So, yeah, I mean, this is cool. It's a cool feature. It's a feature that I cannot imagine myself actually using.
Yeah,
but it's a cool feature. So,
there you go.
That's great.
Next up, and this is why we can't have nice things, but at least maybe now we can because the hammer's come down on them. Attorney General James from New York, the state of New York, secures $615,000 from companies that supplied fake comments to influence the FCC's repeal of net neutrality rules. We talked about this a long time ago.
We did.
Told listeners you should go supply comments and say like, no, net neutrality good. They repealed this because there were millions of comments, which seemed suspect. And sure enough, it was suspect.
So here's my issue with this. The fine should have been significantly larger. Like it should have been such a high fine that it almost completely crippled these companies or put them out of business. Like that's the fine that this should happen.
It should have been like $10 per fake person they created. Yes. So like $85 million.
Totally agree with that. Yes. So that's the only problem I have with it. Otherwise it's a big win. It's big. Let's find these people. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So.
And hopefully this sends a message to the FCC of like, hey, maybe you should do this differently.
Right.
B, bring back net neutrality.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And speaking of bots, I guess, or fake anything, 47% of all internet traffic came from bots in 2022. This is apparently up a little bit from the year before. That's more than I expected. I mean, I would have expected there's a lot of bots on the internet, but I would have never guessed that almost half of all internet traffic is bots. Though I guess, honestly, looking at the traffic stats for the websites that I control, I'm not all that much surprised, I suppose, now that I think about it.
So. Yeah, and before you like get worried about it, so I mean it is actually a bad thing. So for the fourth consecutive year, the volume of bad bot traffic, bot traffic, and
yeah, that's
bad,
true.
Malicious automated software applications capable of high speed abuse, misuse, and attacks grew to 30.2%. So if you're wondering why your cost of internet access is so high, right there's the reason
that's why you are
subsidizing the cost of bad bot traffic, which like you think about it, if we got rid of 30% of the traffic on the internet, A, it would be faster. B, your cost of access would probably go down by about 30%. Maybe not fully 30%.
Yeah.
Maybe 20%.
Right? Yeah.
Like that would be a pretty penny for me.
I'll tell you, man, like bot traffic is actually pretty profound. I mean, not the, as I think more about it. So think about our podcast company, edgewise.media, right? So it's a small website, very small website, very small footprint, not a lot of inbound links to it. And I think I was on the back end today and it had over 100 failed login attempts.
Yep.
So these are bots just trying to hack our site constantly.
Yep.
And so it's like if they're coming at our site, that's tiny, with 100 failed login attempts, like imagine the scale of like Facebook and like all this. I mean, it's unfathomable. It's wild.
Sites that are actually valuable.
Well, yeah. And that actually have like presence, you know, that are, like, right. that are actually out. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely wild. So yeah. Anyway, the internet is, it's why we can't have nice things.
Time for the Weird and Wacky segment.
Abominable snowman.
Oh, he's not an expert.
One of the TAs turned out to be a bot. First up for Weird and Wacky, a callback to a article that we had a while ago. I don't remember when it was a while ago, but YouTuber Trevor Jacob admits to crashing his plane for views.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I mean,
is he going to jail? Is this a jailable offense?
Oh, for sure. It's a felony. I think it's a felony. Yeah. Ooh, so
could face up to 20 years in prison.
Yeah. Yeah. So for, as a reminder, so this guy was, you know, he's in a plane, a small plane, and he ends up, quote unquote, having plane trouble and parachutes out of the plane. He, of course, videos the whole thing. There's GoPro on the outside of the plane. There's GoPro on him, you know, parachutes down, lands in all these branches and brambles and gets hurt. Then he hikes to the plane and whatever else. So he really did it for YouTube traffic to become viral. And so a couple of quick things. one person noticed in the video, like, he's taking off in the plane while wearing a parachute, which is kind of unusual behavior for a pilot. Like, you don't typically already have the parachute strapped on. Like, that's not a normal thing. So
if you don't trust the plane, you maybe shouldn't go up in it.
That's a little suspect. I've flown in small planes. You don't ever put on a parachute first. That's just not a thing you do. So there's that. And then ultimately, you know, he hiked to the plane. He messed with the crash site. I think he removed stuff from the crash site. He actually like tried to hide the crash site, I believe, at one point. Like, anyway, it's all kinds of problems. He's in a world of hurt.
So wait, are you telling me when you get on a Delta flight, you're not already wearing the parachute? Like, am I doing this wrong?
Yes, you are absolutely doing this wrong. Okay. Yeah. So what you need to be doing are wearing comfortable shoes and no parachute. Like, that's your goal. Comfortable shoes.
Is that why no everybody parachute. Gets freaked out when I get on the plane? Now I get it.
You know, I never thought about that. Like, how much would that totally flip? Like, if you got onto a Delta flight wearing like a full skydiving outfit, like, you got the helmet, you got like the thing, like, people would be totally flipping out, you know, like, you know, somebody like, has to have done it at some point.
What is happening? Like, what?
Why are you here? What's going on? This can't be good.
My name's DB Cooper. It's all fine. It's all fine.
It's all fine. All right. Next up in the Weird Mikey, quote, Friends characters transformed into toddlers with AI, and it's quote, adorable. So somebody used AI to imagine what each of the Friends characters looked like as toddlers, which, of course, I imagine there are probably toddler photos that exist of them anyway. So I wonder how they compare. But it's pretty funny to look at. Like, yeah. Some of these were pretty entertaining to view, I'd say.
Monica's picture kind of threw me for a bit because I didn't realize that the toddler Monica was wearing a hoodie. Because the hair was like weird looking.
Yeah. I don't know if I realized that either. I'll have to look at that one. Yeah.
The forehead is a little excessively large on Monica.
Yeah. But, I would say the Jennifer Aniston one is like, could be real. It's kind of scary accurate. The Lisa Kudrow one could be real. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Monica one does look a little strange. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
the Chandler one with all the hair is by far my favorite, though. Like, oh my gosh, that's like the greatest.
What I really, you know, like, we've talked about articles like this where they've done things like this, and it's all great and everything, but I can never generate, not that I've really tried that hard, but generate pictures like this. I would really love for them to share the prompts that be a little bit better. Like, how did they actually do this? Like, what picture did they supply? Be like, hey, create a baby image of this person.
Right. How did they do that? Like, yeah, that's a great.
What
question.
Did you say to get this picture? Because I think that would be much more useful for somebody like me to be able to do things like this next article. Midjourney created fake IKEA bomb shelter furnishings catalog, and it's shockingly convincing.
Dude.
And it is.
It is so like, oh my, it looks absolutely real. Like, it looks like I'm looking into a dystopian future furniture catalog. Like, if the Hunger Games had like a furniture catalog, like, that's what it is wild. I mean, it's so good.
Well, there was one piece of furniture in here. I was like, well, I might want to get that. And it was for super cheap. It was like this red.
But you know these aren't real, right?
Like, I was like, wait, can I get it for that much?
You're gonna get it for your metaverse that's going under? Is that what you're gonna do? Yeah. Speaking of,
metaverse is deorbiting. What?
There was a new study that came out that talked about how the metaverse has like this unlimited potential by like 2035. And of course, the study was funded by Facebook. So I thought that was hilarious. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah,
so.
No, there's a chair in there that's like a red stuffed chair, and it was like only 89 euros. And
it looked
like,
really slick. Yeah. It was the one with the two red chairs in that room?
Yeah, the two red chairs. I was like,
I saw that photo.
I can't, I don't think I can buy that for 89 euros. Okay, it's tech rec time. Adam, what do you have for us this week?
All right, I'm gonna recommend a game. It's a word game, and it's on I think it's on the Merriam-Webster website, and it's called Name That Thing. And it gives you a picture, and then you have to name that thing, and it tells you how well you did. And I just played the game right before we started, and I missed half of them because obviously I'm not very good at naming everyday things. For example, one of the photos
everyday things. What did you miss?
Yeah, like one of the photos was of a wooden chair. And it pointed to a specific part of the wooden chair and it said, name that thing. And so it's a wooden chair. Like that's what it is. It's a wooden chair. No. What's the piece of that wooden chair? It's got a specific name to it. Right. So it gets very specific, but some of them are general, it showed a hoe and it's like, well, that's a hoe, like a garden tool hoe. Like it's a hoe. Like that's what it is. Obviously. It showed a part of a flower and pointed to a specific piece of the flower. Like what's the name of that thing? And it's like, I don't know that I remember from biology from ninth grade that thing is. I think it was was the stamen. I believe it was. Oh my God.
If you're going to go for something weird on a flower, it's going to be the stamen.
Yep. How did you know that? I'm sorry. You would probably do really well at this game.
I'm going to have to give it a spin right after
you need
this.
You need to go give it a spin. It's a fun little game. It's a good way to waste about 30 seconds of your time and make you feel significantly dumber than you did previously. So, which is probably good for me. So, sorry, Sanjay, what's your tech rec?
So on the other end, and we didn't coordinate these. This is a website. This word does not exist. Now we've talked about these things before, like this face or this person does not exist. Well, somebody has come up with words now that don't exist.
No.
And you go on this site, and the front page of this will create a word and then a definition, and there you go. Now here's what's interesting. I was like, oh well, I could use this to come up with domain names that are available.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first one I checked, that domain was already gone. This word does not exist, but the domain is already gone.
Okay.
So it does kind of exist, maybe. By the way, so the definition I've got right now is Wilisonate.
Okay.
I guess I can't pronounce it wrong since the word doesn't exist. So however I pronounce it is right. It means a relaxed, active, and efficient. A Wilisonate gentleman.
All right. So the word that I came up with is trustle, which is a rope, typically of indeterminate quality, attached to a mast to prevent it dropping.
To prevent it from deorbiting. The mast, the trustle prevents the mast from deorbiting. And if you refresh,
it'll say deorbiting. That's the next word that doesn't exist. I love that.
If you need words or you don't know words, I think those two things, those two websites will help you out.
I tend to make up words. That's probably a good site for me.
Yeah. So you're a living embodiment of this word does not exist.
That's it. Yeah. I just make something up. Yeah. Try to sound convincing.
Well,
yeah.
If our listeners want to find words that don't exist and want to come to you for them, where can they find you online?
They can find me on my website, adamjwalker.com. Go there, sign up for my newsletter, and all will be well with the world. How about you, Sanjay?
They can go to sanjayparekh.com. That's SanjayParekh. I don't think I've ever spelled that out, and people might not know how to spell it, but yeah.
That's true, yeah.
Go to my website.
I won't lie. I have to remind myself how to spell your last name every time, mentally. I don't know why. I have to go.
You don't have muscle memory like the Cirque du Soleil person yet?
I'm so I've never told you this before, but it always makes me so nervous that I'm going to spell your name wrong for some reason. I don't know why. So I will spell it out. I know what it is. I've spelled it out so many times, and I will still go to your website and double check almost every single time.
That's why I have so many hits on my website.
Yes. It's me and all the bots. Those are the two things. Yeah. I'm double checking name. Your first name, I never worry about spelling wrong. I don't know why, but the last name, I'm always nervous about it. I don't know what it is.
KH. Oftentimes people do it HK for some reason. I'm like, that's not it.
That's not it. Obviously not.